Hi, this is Lee Reeve of World Cider Experience in Japan, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 114. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are on the other side of the world, from my spot of Ciderville at least. We are in Japan, Yokohama, with Lee Reeve of the World Cider Experience. There's going to be more on that chat in just a moment. Welcome back to Cider Chat. If you are new to this podcast, I'd like to let you know from time to time, I let people know this, that the first part of the podcast is about news across Ciderville around the world. And then we go into the main chat, typically anywhere from 10 to 12, 13 minutes in. So you could always scroll ahead if you don't want to catch up with the news and just go to the main conversation this week with Lee Reeve of the World Cider Experience. But what I would like to do is I want to welcome folks who have been joining the Cider Chat Facebook page, because that's so much fun for me to find out who people are. And it gives that flavor of a world cider experience, if you will, because people are coming in from all over the world to find out what's going on with the podcast, to get some latest news, and sometimes to have some nice conversations. So I'm going to begin and just go down this list here. And we're going to say first, howdy doody to Bill, who is holding a pint of something, looks really good, to his lips. And he is from Ohio. Then we have Peter of Red Brook Cider. He's from the Czech Republic. And Carmel from Estonia. We had Yanni Honsu, that is a cidery in Estonia, on this podcast a while back. That was episode number 63 with Alvar Rosama. Really fantastic cidery, delicious. Their ciders are now coming into the U.S. And then Annalise from Canada. We have Christy from Pennsylvania, AJ from Michigan, Randy, who's somewhere out there in Ciderville, Victor from Russia, William from San Diego, and that's nice. San Diego is just there. Jose from Panama, Ron, who's a cider maker and a cider writer. He has a new cidery starting up in Middletown, Connecticut, and that is called Bespoke Cidery. We have Dan from the UK. He is based there, and he is a chef. Brad from Copenhagen. Scott, who is in New York City. Let's see. Simon from the UK, Nottingham region. John, who is from Colorado, and he is a co-founder of Waldschanke Ciders. Oh, I hope I said that right, John. Etienne from Quebec. We've had a number of conversations with Canadians, but we need to have more, of course. We have Brian from Oregon, Robert from Belize, Mihovil from Croatia, Amanda from San Jose, Jody from Crazy Cock Cider. That is in Stafford Springs, Connecticut, and I stopped in there and met Jody and her husband. They are the owners there, and it's a fun story. You know, they both lost their jobs. They didn't really know what to do, so they started a cidery and have a cider bar right there, right off the highway in Connecticut, off of Interstate 84. Really easy, hop, skip, and a jump. Really cool people. So I wish them all the best. Jonathan is a cider maker. He is at Cider Cellars in Amesbury, Massachusetts. If you remember Chad Cook, who was on here just a couple episodes ago. So Jonathan is also a cider maker there. Susanna, who is part of Little Pomona, and she's also known as Drink Britain. I'm going to actually be seeing Susanna this week at CiderCon and having a chat with she and James Forbes. Can't wait for that. Tom from Washington, and what I know about Tom is that he is a real cider dude. That means real cider. You know what I mean by real cider? Tom knows, and I know some of you do too. the Cider Man, or a.k.a. Cider Winkle, a.k.a. Raoul from the Netherlands. I met Raoul, a couple of years now, and he is really, beating the pavement, promoting cider, great guy. Kat, who is from the Iron Bark Cider Works in Claremont, California. Tony from Oregon. Russell, who is part of the STEM Cider team. We had Eric Foster on from STEM Cider. Eric is now on the board of directors for the United States Cider Association. United States Association of Cider Makers. I sometimes get that messed up. We have Oliver from Brussels, Belgium. Hans from the Netherlands, a.k.a. Nipper. You know what they call a nip here in the U.S., Hans? It's like a little tiny bottle, like a kind of like a shot bottle. You get like maybe two shots out of it. Sometimes it's nice to have a nip in your pocket. Okay. Will from Maine, and also the Michigan Cider Works. The dudes there, I've met them. Really good guys. Hope to see them at CiderCon too. Celeste, who is one of the founders of Palm Boots. She is now the cider maker at the Oregon and Washington Cider Collective, and they make small batch dry ciders. It's a nano cidery. So Celeste is a lovely woman, and she's actually a patron of Cider Chat. So thank you so much, Celeste. We have Gordon from Nottingham in the UK, Dorado from Poland, and Siri Huru from Normandy, Rom from Israel, Liam from Ireland, Nicole, who is part of the Virtue Cider team in Michigan, Woodley from Washington, Kingston, who is at Distillery Lane Ciderworks, and when this goes live, I will have already recorded an episode at Distillery Lane Ciderworks based in Frederick, or outside of Frederick, Maryland. Benjamin from New York. He's part of the Leonard Oaks Estate Winery. Joe, who is a winemaker at Vermilion Valley Vineyards. Katie from Rider Ranch, who is out in the Santa Cruz Mountains. I had Eric and Katie Rider of Rider Ranch just a couple episodes ago. That was a fun time. Benjamin of the Beaver Valley Orchard and Cidery in Ontario, Canada. Neil from Portland, Oregon. Jürgen from Austria. I believe Jürgen is like the ambassador of cider there. They have such a cool scene going on. I have actually a recording of the presentation at Cider Days that they did. All these Austrians came in and talked about how they're planting, or they've had, anyways, there's a lot there, so we'll have to catch up with Jürgen. Bill, no, that's the other page. Okay, let's see. I think that's it for now. I might have missed a couple people. That was actually three pages of Facebook people from around the world, and I think that is the drumbeat out there. Cider is around the world. The apple rolls around the world. The pears roll too. Palms are everywhere. So welcome to Cider Chat, the Facebook page. It's non-exclusive. If you want to join, please do. You could also follow this podcast on Twitter at Cider Chat and on Instagram at Cider Chat Ciderville. If you find value in listening to this podcast, then please become a patron of Cider Chat today. Go to the Cider Chat Patreon page and sign up to become a patron. If you're a commercial cidery, it's just the cost of 2 bottles of cider per month. And you could join the likes of makers such as Current Cider in Pennsylvania, Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, Virginia, and Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. Help support this podcast, and in turn, you help keep cider going up. We're going to move into the main chat this week with Lee Reeve of the World Cider Experience. And a couple days after I spoke to Lee, the Insider Japan magazine came into my mailbox, and I'm super stoked about that. This is a hard copy. This is part of his work that he's doing to help get the word out about cider, to educate people in the country of Japan, or, you know, the giant, giant island of Japan. I have relatives in Japan, so I'm pretty stoked that he's doing this. And we're going to be talking about the cider culture there, what's happening, and a little bit why he is in Japan and how he got to this stage. Because I think that story is equally intriguing as what's happening currently with the apple. You can tell he's a really nice guy, and I really appreciate having his time with us today. So now let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Lee Reeve of the World Cider Experience in Japan. We're going to get right into this and start talking about what's happening in your spot of Ciderville in Japan.
Yeah.
It sounds like, from everything I see on social media and corresponding with you, and of course we had Marie Tanaka on a number of episodes back. But wow, you know, what is the current, like, heartbeat of cider as you know it in Japan? And are you based in Tokyo proper? Is that where you are?
No, I'm based in Yokohama, which is about 30 to 45 minutes away from Tokyo. We do things in Tokyo, but we're basically headquartered and based here in Yokohama.
And so that area, that's a large city too. What is the sense around cider? What are you getting there?
Number one, I speak a little bit, I say biased. I've been living in Yokohama pretty much my entire time here in Japan. And Yokohama is one of the things that makes Yokohama so great is that it's a really community-driven city. It's the second largest city in Japan. And it's, you know, we've got millions of people here, but it has a really big sense of local pride and local community, which appeals to me. And I think it works very well with cider culture in general. Yokohama is sort of famous as being the birthplace of many, many things in Japan. When Commodore Perry, you know, came from America here, this is where he landed. So Yokohama boasts a lot of firsts. First electricity this, first gas like that, first tennis courts, ice cream, first craft beer. And they even boast the first Japanese version of cider, which is the soft drink version. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, what I've been trying to do is help Yokohama gain that badge of first, you know, craft cider as we know it in Japan. So, yeah, I'd say, you use the word heartbeat. I think I see myself as a kind of a paramedic, and we're trying to sort of, you know, give that electric jolt into the city about things cider. But it's interesting. It's hardly there yet, but it is happening. It is happening.
You mentioned craft beer, and I know that that's a big stepping stone for you in terms of your venture into the business of libation. So why don't you give us a little sense of your background with that?
I'll start from the beginning, if I don't, I suppose. I'm originally from Newcastle, England. Grew up in Scotland, but I've been living here in Japan for, 15, 16 years. When I came to Japan, I came to Japan as an artist. And because I had a lot of time on my hands, got into homebrewing. And through homebrewing, started a blog. And because I was new and lonely, made it a personal mission to find other homebrewers. And in the course of that, met a few, and those homebrewers became pros, and eventually started writing about homebrewing, and then writing about beer, and then writing about the craft beer scene in Japan, because it was so new at the time. This is 2007, 2008. Eventually, I became a writer for a Japanese beer magazine, and then became its editor. So I've followed the craft beer scene for years, and sort of made my name in the business doing that, writing about it and promoting it. But cider has always been my my first love. So making cider at home, that sort of thing. And I think the point of what I'm trying to say is that I've witnessed, you know, craft beer go from almost nothing to the boom that it's currently enjoying. When I first started, there were, you know, less than a handful of breweries doing craft beer, and now there are, you know, I can't begin to fathom how many there are at the moment. And sort of using that experience and those metrics is trying to sort of stimulate the cider industry into the sort of same movement.
Now, my understanding of cider in Japan is that there's two regions where there is a large production of apples and also cideries, and that is Nagano and Aomori. Is that correct?
Right. So Aomori, the first thing, let's see, Japan has always been apple country, and this is something that I reiterate quite a lot. It is an apple-driven country, and the largest producer is, yes, Aomori. I think they produce something like 56% of all the apples for Japan. These are also dessert apples. These are eating apples. They have been in cider production about three years. They don't have the number of cider is quite small, actually, but they've been doing it, and they've increased the amount of money that they are investing in to cider production. The other area that you mentioned was Nagano, which, probably the second largest apple producing area in the country. And they, you know, cidery per cidery, they have more. But it's an interesting thing because, we use the word cidery, but the fact, well, at least in Nagano's case, it's a lot of apple farms sending their apples to a single winery who in turn makes the cider. So there's only really one or two cider makers currently. So those are the two big areas. Mm-hmm. Aomori and Nagano, but there are a few in other areas of Japan.
And the apples that they're using are primarily culinary apples. Are you seeing any different there?
Well, this is interesting. I mean, because this is the people ask about why cider isn't as big as it is in Japan, and there are different answers depending on what, you know, how you approach the question. But one of the immediate challenges is the apples that are popular in Japan are for culinary use. They are very high in sugars and very, very low in tannins. So this is, for the cider, you know, people that know cider, this is a very obvious, I don't say problem, I say challenge. Some of the cider makers they're actually very aware of this, and they're making steps to get other apple sources, but just by nature of import and how difficult it is in this country, it's still a challenge. But there's an English variety that is available, but not widely available. There are people now talking about importing grafts and starting to try to cultivate different varieties. So we'll see how that goes. That's very, very new, though. That's something that's being talked about now.
Right. And you have a business called Abru Kadabru. Let's talk a little bit about your business, Abru Kadabru.
It started out as a personal blog. The name, very quickly, I'm a magician originally by trade. So I just sort of combined portamentoed magic and brewing and came up with Abracadabru. But it started off as just a blog, a homebrewer's blog, and just writing about recipes and processes and that sort of thing. And by just a stroke of luck, people found it and started contacting me. So I constructed a network of homebrewers began promoting homebrew and then promoting craft beer, and then started getting contacted by people that were doing craft beer events. And I say people, I mean Japanese people that didn't have English language skills. So I was sort of the English, not a translator per se, but I was the bridge, I suppose, connecting the foreign communities with the Japanese communities. And I did that whilst still do it a little, but did that for quite some time. And in that period, discovered or was approached by a magazine that was a new magazine that was dedicated to promoting craft beer in Japan. And I became a writer and then an editor for it, and did that for a few years. And kind of watched the craft beer scene come into its first full bloom. And then I left and went back to magic and art, and came back to Abracadabru a few years ago as an importer. So now I import craft beer kits and craft beer, ingredients. I do a lot of, yeast and that sort of thing.
Are you supplying any cider makers, non-commercial cider makers, with equipment for fermenting?
Well, non-commercial, absolutely. So yeast is probably the biggest thing that I retail for people, but yeast kits and consultant, I just do a lot of teaching people how to do it and how to do it as best that they can, that thing.
Is there an attraction to wild fermentation? I mean, you're obviously selling yeast, cultured yeast, but what about like a wild ferment? And also in terms of the apple.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, that's where I'd really like to see it. That's the level I'd like to see it at. Unfortunately, we're just not there yet here. But there are some very small, individual cider and even mead makers that talk about that and do stuff like that. Those are few and far and few in between right at this stage of the game.
Now, you have a relationship with Clive Poole, who owns and runs the Full Monty British Pub and Cider Bar.
Full Monty, yeah.
Yeah.
And Cider Bar, right. So this is right.
Please tell us a little bit about, this is like a business relationship.
This is key.
He's a Brit too. And
yes, he is. Yeah. So wrong side of England, but yeah, he is also a Brit. I'm from the north, and he's there from London. But so while I was working in the craft beer scene, is when I met Clive, and I met Clive as a guy that was importing and selling craft beer. But when I met him, the first thing that I discovered was that he had cider, and it was probably the first time that I'd seen it in a bar, as opposed to just bottled Aspel or Strongbow or Magners in a shop somewhere. And he had ciders, and he even had cider on draft, which was for me it was magnificent. So I started writing about his pub and promoting his pub as a cider pub, and trying to get people out there to taste the cider, and in doing that, we've just become very, very close. So we became very, very close friends. And we've just had this sort of symbiotic relationship. He gives me the cider and I give him the articles. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is, when I first met him, I think he had maybe five to seven ciders available. I think it was 2 on draft and the rest in bottles. And now he's up something like 7 on draft and, you know, in the realm of 80 to 90 in bottles. So he's become pretty much the largest supplier of cider that I can think of in Japan. And somewhere in that relationship, not too long ago, it was about 2 years ago, in fact, over a few too many glasses of cider, said, well, why don't we just pool our forces and do something about this lack of, education or just not general knowledge about cider in Japan. I mean, it's not unheard of. There's just a lot of sort of misconceptions and it's just been thrown into this niche that it doesn't belong or doesn't deserve to be in, I think. With his wife as well, Kai, so it's the three of us, one night decided to just, you know, do something about it. And that's how the World Cider Experience was born.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, before we talk about the World Cider Experience,
sure,
I want to just kind of get a little bit more about what you mean by the niche that cider you saw was happening in Japan. What were you referring to?
Well, let's see. I mean, again, I'll use craft beer as a reference point, but it's generally a lot of people say that Japan is sort of 10, 15 years behind America as far as where craft beer is. And I think that's a fair assessment. Cider is too far away. It's not too far off from that. So cider in Japan now is sort of where America was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. It's not unheard of here, but it's just not at the level that is in the rest of the world. Let's see, how can I reference that? There are two very large alcohol beverage makers here in Japan, Kirin and Nikka, and they both have a cider product. And you can find it in convenience stores, and you can find it in supermarkets. But they do not market it. It's something that's just on the shelf, and it's not the best representative product for what cider really is. There's also the word cider also exists in Japan. It has for over 100 years. However, that product is a carbonated soft drink, and it's non-alcoholic. And so when you say cider in Japan, most, at least Japanese people, that's what they think of. They think of this sort of 7-Up kind of soft drink. Mm-hmm. When you start talking about cider as the cider that, you know, people in Ciderville know it, in Japan, it's really limited to a sort of France or French method champagne-based or champagne-styled cider. Most of the ciders that Japanese producers produce is a sort of colorless, low carbonation, very, very dry cider, which is fine, except there isn't any representation of the other variations of cider. Mm-hmm. And I think for myself, and I think I speak for a Clive in this respect, is that, you know, as people from the UK, we want or expect something with a bit more apple bottom, a bit more, tannic sort of quality. And you just can't get that here right now. So one of our challenges is how do we do that? How do we let the public here at large know that there are other varieties of cider, that there are other styles of cider, that, you know, there are sweets and medium sweets, and not everything is dry.
I think what you're experiencing in Japan is what I basically see happening around the world. I think it's really gracious to say, you know, Japan is where the U.S. was 20 years ago. But I tell you, 20 years ago, you're really like walking, you know, the tried and true cider makers who are still in business and around in the U.S., they were like walking the streets of New York and trying to get in the front door. It wasn't easy.
So yeah.
It might be like that. And certainly we've had a boom here, but in each part of the world, I think there is that struggle to have cider really come full forward in terms of the knowledge, because there's that nomenclature that you're talking about. You're saying cider in Japan is considered like, you know, a fizzy soft drink, basically. I think that's true everywhere, no doubt about that. So I'm wondering.
No, absolutely.
How do you do that? Well, I mean, what's the goal here? Then maybe that kind of leads us into the World Cider Experience and what you're planning on doing and what you've just done with the magazine. We should talk about that. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, we'll get to that, I suppose, in a minute. I'm very passionate about cider, and one of the reasons why I love Clive is that he is too. I mean, he's probably more so about me. He's certainly more knowledgeable about cider's, you know, brand per brand and maker per maker than I am. Yeah, how do you do that? So we've done sort of small scale, medium scale cider events to show people how they can at least enjoy cider, and then, you know, within those events, try to give them as big as a variety of ciders to try as possible. Now that works, you know, on a small scale event level, but how do we get that word out to the rest of the rest of the city, or the rest of the prefecture, the rest of the country? And in the back of my head, I've always, because of my background in publishing, I've always thought, well, you know, we need to have a magazine. We need to have something that people can hold in their hands and reference and keep on the shelf and learn, you know, issue by issue that way. And there were just a lot of these, you know, and ideas that we were throwing back and forth. The other, I don't know, skill set that I think that I have is the ability to network and promote. And what I learned through craft beer also applies to cider right now in Japan. And that's, excuse me for that, is that there are these sort of groups of cider people all across the country don't have a means to communicate with each other, and they don't have a means to communicate with the rest of the country. And so there are these sort of pockets of cider people all over the country that want more but don't know how to get it. And they've got things to say, but they don't know where to say it. So in my head, I thought, well, that's it. I've got to create this magazine that gives them a platform, for the reader to learn and for the makers to speak. And that's, for me, what's driving me now. Mm-hmm. That's my main goal.
Well, I see the Japanese as very tech savvy people. So I'm kind of curious about that. Like, why not just have like a Facebook page? What's the discoverability difference between having hard copy versus virtual?
It basically boils down to culture. Japanese culture is a very, very, very interesting and very sometimes frustrating. So set. It's a very sort of fixed culture. What I mean by that is, as opposed to the other parts of the world, printed media in Japan is very, very important. This is a country of magazines. People get their information from magazines. People educate themselves through magazines. So it's very important. Internet, social media is more of a means of communicating, not learning. And I think one of the driving forces behind what I do and what World Cider Experience is trying to do is educate the public, educate the cider makers here, educate the people, the importers. And so that's why I think printed material is absolutely vital. you said, yeah, tech savvy, and this is, yeah, absolutely true. So you've I think about whiskey, and I again go back X amount of years when the whiskey makers in Japan were not taken seriously, and now you have world winning award, very, very incredible whiskies. And I think, yeah, I believe somewhere in my heart that Japan can do the same thing with cider, because they get the bug, and then they get very, very focused, and they'll do anything that they can to sort of improve their technique, improve their benchmarks, and just improve their skills in general. And I was in Nagano two and a half months ago, talking with about 9 different cider makers, and they all want to do better. They understand that they need the next step to get to that next level. So it's beginning. It is starting. It's important, I think, for people outside the country to understand that the barrier of language is not something to be overlooked. There are cider makers here in Japan, but they are Japanese, and most of them do not speak English. And their means of getting information are, they have to rely on what they can translate or has been translated, which is not much. So when I visited these cider makers, one of the things that I expressed wanting to do, and it's something that I'm very adamant about succeeding in, is getting cider makers from other countries, from England, from America, to come over and do these collaborations or share knowledge and information. This model worked with the craft beer industry, and I think it can work as well with cider.
So obviously, without a question, you are bilingual. You could speak Japanese, and your English with that nice Scottish twang there is pronounced. I love it. It's great. So yeah,
I do speak both. I do speak Japanese and English.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, that helps quite a bit, and it's a difficult, for folks in other countries who are very English dominated, they just kind of have that as a native tongue. It's kind of hard to get that cultural twist, and so I really respect that.
Yeah, it's very complicated. It's not easy to sort of. I think I've lived here long enough where I don't want to sort of generalize anything, but I can give an example that I can give is again. Because most of the cider makers here in Japan are actually winemakers, they're making their ciders like wine and like champagne, and they're using wine and based and champagne yeasts. But what they've done is they've modeled after French style of cider making, and because that's what's appealing to them now, and they've pretty much solely focused on that, and they're not giving the other styles a chance. That's something that I'm very active about changing and speaking about. That's one. They get pretty. I don't want to use the word obsessed, but they do get very, very focused. That they can use that to their advantage. So what I'm trying to do is give them the education and the materials, again, a conduit, a bridge between the international scene and what's going on in Japan, and then letting them run with it. That's the next level.
Right. Now, there's hop ciders out there in the world. There's a whole spectrum. And I know that there are American ciders that are being imported into Japan that do not do that kind of traditional, I'm going to say, like an old world traditional type of cider making that has a fruit cider or the hop cider. It could be like a chai tea cider.
Right. Yes.
How does that kind of fit within your scope and vision for cider in Japan?
Well, I'm actually glad you brought that up. So the offering of Japanese ciders, the ciders made in Japan with a Japanese label, yeah, again, fit into the sort of champagne style dry cider. There are, I would say, at least 4 to 5 bigger international cider importers. Clive being one of them. He imports an astounding amount of English ciders, and there's a guy out in Hokkaido in Sapporo who imports ciders from Oregon, and I even represent an importer that imports from Seattle and the Schilling ciders, Seattle cider company and Schilling. So there are international ciders available. What's really for me very exciting is that not just Japan, but in Asia, the cider scene is growing. Hong Kong, Singapore, there are people there importing international ciders and getting that going. I've spoken with them, and right now in South Korea, there is a beer company called the Handan Malt, but they have a cider division called the Handan Apple, and they produce a hopped cider. And actually, Full Monty just started importing it, and it's really, really good. And so what we are trying to do is leverage this fact that, you know, there are Asian cider makers making this really different kind of cider, and why don't you give it a chance? The fruit ciders, well, there are a few, again, most of them from America, and you can get some of the more traditional scrumpies and things like that from Full Monty. So there are choices. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, those choices are sort of limited to X amount of pubs in the country. The retail market here is dreadfully strict and not very flexible, and traditionally not very trying of new things. Two Town Cider from America is being imported through a smaller liquor company, and even they are finding it very difficult to place these their product into supermarkets because, for example, one of the reasons is that Japan already has cider, and then you argue back, well, no, they really don't, but yes, we do, and it kind of just, when they finally acquiesce, they throw the ciders on the shelf next to the sparkling wines, and they never get seen. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do again is just sort of be more vocal, more loud about it, and sort of direct people to places that they can try cider. There are more and more bars putting it, stocking it, but even they lack the sort of background in how to market it and how to sell it to their customers. So that's what we're trying to give to them.
Well, that isn't too unlike what is happening here in the U.S., where it's all about shelf space. You know, it's finally you see people really happy that suddenly there's a sign in the store that says cider, and it's not just scrabbled in with the craft beer. So not too dissimilar. Right. So it's kind of interesting to see that trajectory. So let's talk about the magazine. The first issue just came out, and is this bi-monthly?
So the magazine is called Insider Japan, mm-hmm. but Insider Japan is really, it's sort of it's a company that I've just started and we're actually incorporating right now. And Insider Japan is a sort of media promotion consulting company. And we also import and retail cider-related goods and merchandise, that kind of thing. The product that I create with Insider Japan is sort of my contribution to World Cider Experience is the magazine. It's a quarterly right now, so we come out seasonally. The winter edition just came out in December. And the next one, if all goes well, will be out in April of this year. The first issue was just, as a publisher, was sort of just the announcement. The content is very, very soft, and it's just sort of a, you know, we're here kind of thing. But the goal of the magazine is, again, the three sort of pillars that I stand by is one, educate and inform the public. And it's also a vehicle to give a platform for apple farmers and cider makers and anybody related in the cider industry here in Japan to speak out and let others know what they're doing, but also sort of to give the rest of the world and the cider community a look at what's happening in Japan. We need help. And if there's anybody out there that can help us do it, you know, we want it. Again, I use my history and experience of the craft beer industry as a sort of model. And it worked for craft beer, and I hope it can at least accelerate the popularity and the knowledge about cider in Japan. You know, last year we had Bill Bradshaw come, and he came as a result of Nagano's efforts to bring in somebody who knew about cider. He was gracious enough to contribute some photographs to the first issue. In our next issue, Gabe Cook has graciously said that he, you know, can possibly contribute something to the magazine. So if we can give that kind of a status to people in Japan involved with cider, sort of giving them the confidence that there are people out there that believe in what you do, so, you know, let's join forces and let's work together and really push cider in Japan.
Lee, is the magazine in Japanese or is it in English or is it bilingual?
Sorry, I should have mentioned that it's bilingual. Yeah, it is bilingual. The articles are written by myself and other writers, obviously. And we've got a team of people that do the translations, but bilingual. Yeah, it's absolutely key, absolutely essential.
And I just want to bring people, you know, Ciderville up to snuff here. Lee referred to Gabe Cook, and he is known as the ciderologist, and he is based in the UK and is teaching and promoting cider. So that makes absolute sense. And then with Bill Bradshaw, he is a photographer, and he co-produces book with, Pete Brown. And that was just
Pete Brown. That's right.
That book was just translated into
Japanese.
Yeah, just recently.
Yeah,
and I think that was kind of
world's
the kickoff.
Best ciders.
Yeah, a wonderful book. I have the English copy, and
yeah, so do I.
Yeah, so that's neat. So you have that going on. You know, again, congratulations on Insider Japan. That's really exciting to have that going out there. Having it be bilingual. That's a little bit what's happening in Asturias with La Sidra. They have a imprint magazine in, I'm going to say, Spanish. They might say it's, you know, a little bit of Spanish, but, you know, Asturian. And they also have it in English too. So these are little touchstones, but you're also going to be doing some events, right? There's some goals to have some big cider events.
Right. So getting back to a world cider experience, my partners are Clive and Kai of the Full Monte British Pub and Cider House. They own a pub, but they're also cider importers. And again, one of the bigger ones. So I sort of leverage their strength in that, coupled with my publishing background. So I provide the magazine, they provide the cider. And in tandem, what we do is create events. And we've pretty successfully done a lot of cheese and cider events, sort of cheese and cider pairings. And we've been growing numbers that way. And now it's how do we get creative and sort of expand that In Japan, maybe starting next month, there's a thing called Hanami, which is the cherry blossom season. And it's when all the cherry blossoms go into massive full bloom. And in Japan, you know, people have parties under these trees and they have these, you know, magnificent barbecues and they get absolutely sloshed for weeks and weeks. And that's a nationwide cultural event. And we're trying to, I've suggested taking that and maybe turning it into a cider event, you know, having a cider cherry blossom viewing. So things like that. I think Clive was talking about doing a cider barbecue event on a rooftop hotel here in Yokohama. So we just try to create these opportunities for people to come and enjoy cider. And one of the things I totally forgot to mention is that cider is just right now, unfortunately, a little expensive in this country. The taxes, the import taxes and duties are a little frustrating. So, you know, ciders that cost, I don't know, just put out a figure like $5 in America cost twice or three times as much here in Japan. So it does put people off, you know, that initial commitment to actually try a cider.
I heard that there might be an association forming with the cider makers in Japan, and I'm wondering if there's any, I don't know how it works in the laws or the tax code in Japan, but maybe some type of legislation that might be changing that. Is there any push for that?
Well, there are liquor laws being changed. I do not think that they apply directly to cider because cider is still rather unregulated. I think it still falls under the wine category. But beers and liqueurs, are currently going through a tax change. Basically, in Japan has a sort of third category of alcoholic beverage. And it's the drinks that have a smaller percentage of, say, hops and malt, and have a higher content of other additives and that kind of thing. And they were taxed quite low, and they became very, very popular. As a result, some of the beer sales kind of slowed down, and still slowing down. But so I think the Japanese they're trying to re-regulate those tax laws to put beer back, get their sales back up. I don't think that applies so much to cider yet, just because it's just not it's just not marketed is enough yet.
Right. I was wondering, what is the social cultural piece there on drinking in public? You mentioned the Cherry Blossom Festival, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
But what
it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
What is the, you know, the acceptability for public drinking, and how is cider consumed in Japan? Is it like a special occasion, like with a special bottle of wine?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's tackle the first part of that question. The drinkability in Japan is pretty amazing. I think anybody who visits Japan for the first time, it's one of the things that they fall in love with. Public drinking is pretty much allowed. I mean, you can walk down the street with a beer in your hand. You can walk down. You can ride trains with a can of alcoholic beverage in your hand, and it happens. I do it. I think everybody that I know does it to some degree. Drinking is part of the culture in many different forms. Zero problem there.
Lee, what about in a vehicle?
Oh, no, that's certainly, no. They're not insane here.
That's good.
No. Yeah, there is certainly the safety there, but drinking in public is certainly not illegal, provided that, you know, the drinker keeps within within bounds of common sense. But it is very, it's very typical to wake up on a Saturday morning and go into a big city and see, you know, people passed out at the train stations because they've had one too many. Mm. And, you know, unlike where I'm from in England, they're not, you know, put into a police car and then driven to the hospital and then, you know, or jail even. But here it's just a part of the weekend thing.
Wow.
That saying, there are, just different styles of drinking. I mean, there is going to the restaurant, going to the pub, which I think, you know, for craft beer is in a kind of a heyday now. There are so many craft beer bars now and people go there and support them. The sort of drunken drinking at the, you know, passing out at train stations that I mentioned. Well, there are very high alcohol, you know, 8-9% alcohol drinks that you can buy for, $1.50, $2 at the convenience store. And that is it's just a really quick way to catch a quick buzz and have a good time. That style of drinking is also very prevalent in Japan. Cider is maybe I unfairly do this. I think it kind of falls into the more elite because of its association with champagne. For the Japanese, it has a kind of a wine champagne novelty to it now, which is unfortunate because it immediately conjures up, you know, very high prices. You can only get ciders in 750 milliliter bottles. When you see Japanese ciders, they're mostly, they're in these sort of 750 French styled bottles.
Well, that is spoken,
but, you know, like there are other options.
That's spoken like a true Scotsman. That little bit of that, you know, the French versus the English style. I'm hearing that, Lee. I'm definitely hearing that.
Well, you know, but hey, you know, to that, you know, Eric Baudelaire's stuff is still one of my favorites. So I mean, I'm all for the French. But I think, for example, the people that import are importing, you know, 355 milliliters and 500 milliliter cans and bottles. And they're finding it very, very difficult to put on the shelves because people just say that's not cider. You know, it should be in a bottle. It should be. And that's the sort of misconception or stigmas that we're trying to change. One of Clive's best selling products is Black Rat Cider, which comes in, you know, in a can. And if you're familiar with Japan, it looks and feels like the kind of stuff that you buy at the convenience store. I think that's a good thing because one of the things that I really try to get onto people is that cider is not an elitist drink. This is it's an every man's drink or every woman's drink. And it doesn't have to be enjoyed in the sort of very fancy schmancy setting. We can do that at the pub. It works very well. Clive has got many cider fans that come back for cider. He's got many people that come in, Japanese and internationals, that come in and want to try something new and can you recommend something new. But, you know, at the general public at large, it's just not like that yet. So, one of the things with World Cider Experience, one of the things with the magazine is to try to give people the opportunity to see the variety that is already here available in Japan.
The learning curve in Japan,
yes,
feels so similar to what I experience and see across the board throughout the world. So I don't know if that is a positive or is like, oh no, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat, but you know, one cider lifts, you know.
Yeah.
When one cider goes up, the sea rises with it. And I think your work there and what Clive is doing is so important.
What gives me hope is that there are cider makers already here in Japan that want it to happen as well. In our next issue, I'll be interviewing a Japanese bloke who is part of a small Japanese cider group. He just came back from England after having spent several months training and learning from English cider makers. That is incredibly exciting. So, you know, he's just come back, and their first their first challenge is to how to incorporate English style of cider making into what they've got as far as their crop. And I had a quick conversation with him, and all he could not stop talking about is grafting and how they wanted to bring in we've got to bring in more varieties of apples. We have to bring in more varieties of apples. So there's a thing happening, you know, there is a thing happening. So what I want to do is make sure that the public is ready for it when they are.
Exactly. The subscription, people can subscribe to Insider Japan via how? How would they do that?
Well, it's free. You don't have to pay for it. I'll be starting a subscription service where you can pay basically to cover sort of the postage and subscribe. So that will be available very, very soon. For anybody not in Japan, there will be a way to get it. We'll also be, I haven't quite decided the best way to do it yet, but a digital version as well. So I definitely want to make it available to as many people that want it. Because again, it's very important that people outside of Japan have an insight into what's happening here, and then, you know, people that can either help or want to contribute or whatever can get a hold of me. I've got a website, so it's insiderjapan.com, and it's still a work in progress, but pretty soon, yeah, there will be subscription options there.
The heartbeat of the drum, actually a taiko drum, just gets me in the groove for Japan. Thank you, Lee Reeve of the World Cider Experience. A big tip of the hat to what you're doing there. Also to Clive Poole and Kai and all the great folks who are growing apples, learning. You heard what the guy said. They are asking for help, for guidance, for good insight. You know, why not take a trip to Japan? Get in the zone. Certainly, you're going to be able to find cider, and that's a good reason to go. Wouldn't it be nice to do a totally cider tour to Japan? I think so. All right, well, I'm going to get back to my duties at hand here and sign off for now. We'll be back next week with another amazing episode. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. Yeehaw!